What is going on, everybody? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. This is episode 54, and I am talking to Gwen Hicks. So this is kind of a funny episode because not just a few months ago, I interviewed Erin Moon. And I found her through a different podcast that I listened to. It was a great interview. You should go check it out. She had a whole Lent calendar devotional sort of come out that we talked about. And through another set of circumstances, I came across Gwen Hicks through National Angels and Susan Ramirez and foster care and that whole world, except that Erin and Gwen are daughter and mother. So I'm interviewing Erin Moon's mom here in this episode through an entirely different set of circumstances. She is the executive director of Amarillo Angels, which is a organization up in the panhandle that's just doing work in the foster care world. They're supporting foster parents and foster families, including all the biological children of these families. And it is just like such a needed work. If you've listened to a single episode of this, I hope that you have come away with the need for caring for kids from hard places, which is what Amarillo Angels does. And so this is something that is so near and dear to my heart. It's an incredible organization. And I just found Gwen to be so delightful. It was just such a great conversation. You were going to love this episode. And it is as delightful as this episode is challenging, I think. She is retired from being an educator for a long period of time and now has jumped on as the volunteer executive director of this organization and is just getting after it. I mean, like working full time. And so we talk a little bit just about retirement, and we talk about what that looks like and why she made the decisions that she did. But we also just get into the heart of foster care and supporting these kids who were in foster care and the needed work that all of this is. And I think you're going to laugh and you're going to cry in this episode, and all that stuff is really appropriate. So I hope you enjoy hearing from Gwen. She is awesome. And this episode is powerful. So I encourage you, just look up all the show notes, right? There's notes of for the website of Amarillo Angels, National Angels. You can hear about National Angels founder and director Susan Ramirez a few episodes ago. All good stuff. Make sure you are checking it out and following them on all the socials, y'all. You can always keep up with me on Instagram at Theology of Hustle, so you can see all the episodes coming out. And if you get a second and think about it, I'd really appreciate a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. It just helps get the word out about the podcast. I'd really appreciate you doing that if you think about it. And yeah, I'd love to hear what you thought about this episode. I'd love to hear feedback, reactions. So let me know what you thought about this episode with Gwen, and just some of your thoughts coming out of foster care, maybe. Was there a point that challenged you or that you had never thought about? Yeah, hit me up. I'd love to hear about it. So do all that, and I hope you enjoy this episode with me. Well, Gwen, I can't say thanks enough for coming on the show. I appreciate it. It's nice to officially meet you face-to-face, even over the internet, so...
Thanks, Curry. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. Well, let's jump off and just have you sort of introduce yourself to everyone.
Well, I'm Gwen Hicks, and I am a native Texan, and I live in a little small town just a little south of Amarillo called Canyon. I've lived here for a long, long time, came to college, university here, and just never left. I love it, and it's a great
place.
So
went to WT?
I did. Go Buffs.
Ah, nice. Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. You don't have to worry about it. So really and truly, I'm just a believer, a mom, a wife, former educator. I'm still educating, but not in the public education realm. And right. just a person who loves to live life and serve the Lord. So that's about it.
Okay, awesome. Well, excited to chat Amarillo Angels and all of that stuff. So can we though back up, let's go back to maybe college. I don't know. So how did you end up at WT and how did all that? Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in Odessa, Texas. And I was a first gen graduate from our family from a 4-year university. And it was really hard for my folks to let me come from four or five hours away to Big Canyon, Texas. But I found out about Canyon and West Texas A&M when I was in the choral program at Permian High School. My choir director, Randy Talley, and his wife, Sherry, were very influential in my life and amazing people, godly couple, and had an amazing impact on me. And he was a graduate of West Texas State University at that time.
Oh, okay. Sure,
and
right.
We came up here. I came up here several times with him for music events or camps and things like that. Show choir. We came up here on a retreat for the show choir one time. I just fell in love with Canyon. I don't know how to describe it, except it just felt right. And I started off as a music major. That lasted a semester. I decided that I probably would benefit more from a general education, music education, ability and flexibility. Switched my major to straight elementary education, and just love it here, and ended up staying. So it's been a great thing. I got my master's from WT as well.
Okay.
In educational counseling. So it's been a great journey, and we are really, really love the university. We really have a heart for it and our community. My husband and I, and we just feel very fortunate to be here.
Yeah, it's cool. It's just sort of out there in the, not in the middle of nowhere, but Canyon's a small town, just to have this huge, it's a big university, right?
And it is. And it's grown exponentially over the past few years. I think there's over 10,000 students that attend now. And it's really amazing to be in a small community with a university, because it gives you so many extra things in your world. It gives you, theater and arts and, athletics and just so many things that enrich our life. It makes our small town feel not quite so small.
Yeah, totally. Totally. My sister went to WT. So, it's good. Great place. Go. I love it.
Go
love
Bucks.
It. So then what made you sort of stay in Canyon and decide to sort of set up roots there?
Well, I met a boy.
those boys.
I have been married. I've been married to my husband Andy for 38, almost 39 years, and during that time, we met actually in a biology class. My very first class on my very first day of college was biology 101, and big lecture hall place. I'm a super rule follower, and so I moved directly to the front of the class where I sat and took copious notes, and was just determined to be a good student. Later I met this young man who it was such a serious student and loved academics so much that he had saved his freshman biology class for his junior year so that he could meet freshman girls.
So he's smart, real smart.
And ta-da, here I am, almost 39 years later, we've been married. So.
I can't believe that plan worked. That's
it did. It's sketchy, isn't it? It's really sketchy when you say it now, but he worked it hard. So.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah, amazing. I know. He's a great guy. He's an amazing man. He has a business here, and we've just ended up staying. So it's been our home for a lot of years, and I would happily go wherever the Lord leads me, but boy, it would be a heart thing if we ever left here, because we love it so much.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. So let's talk about you're an educator. Can we talk a little bit just about what that looked like?
You bet. Absolutely. So I graduated, just I've always had this drive in me to excel and do things quickly. And so I graduated in 3 years, back in the day where we didn't have AP and dual credit and things like that. I wanted to get out of school very quickly for my parents' sake, so that, that's expensive. They were paying for my education and I wanted to do that. So I graduated in 3 years. So I have a late summer birthday. And so I was just barely 21 when I started teaching kindergarten.
Wow.
Loved it. Taught it for 2 years until we had our first child, Aaron. And was fortunate enough. It was hard, but I stayed home for 7 years. A couple of years after Aaron was born, we had our son, Drew. And it was just a blessing to be able to do that. And then I was ready to jump back in when Drew went off to school. I knew I needed to be doing something besides, being a homemaker is a wonderful, wonderful career. But for me, the way God made me, I needed more than that. And so I jumped back into the education world into fifth grade and taught that for several years, went back to kindergarten, my first love. for several years. Started working on my master's in educational counseling. So after that, I moved to a middle school and became the counselor, one of the counselors there.
Westover God bless
Park, you. Senior High. You know, people say, that wasn't that a hard jump? I'm like, no, not really. And we had the same rules. Don't, you know, keep your hands and feet belongs to yourself and be nice to everybody and, you know, be kind to your friends. And we had time out. It just looked different.
And they're fun. Middle schoolers are fun. But they are. They will wear you out too.
They are fun and they are so cool. In fact, I ran into one of my students from Westover Park yesterday, and it's so neat to see them successful and in business and contributing to our world here in the Panhandle and beyond. It's amazing. I have I'm very fortunate to keep in touch with a lot of my students, and it's a real blessing. So rocked along at that counseling position for about 6 years. And then someone reached out to me, and we have a local education service center here. There are 20 in the state. We're number 16 in the Panhandle area. Even though we were the first and prototype for the state, we're number 16. We haven't figured that out yet, but it's okay. It doesn't matter. this organization provides support for school districts in the area. And our whole goal was to just be a help to them. It comes out of the legislature in Texas, and many, many states have something similar. They call them BOCES or intermediary units or whatever. But there was a position at that school, at the service center for a Head Start coordinator, which is a wonderful early childhood program that really wraps around the whole family. And that's somebody suggested, because I'd been at the school and my amazing boss, Ken Carrier, had really taught me so much about administration and allowed, we really had a team approach there. So I received a lot of experience in administration and working in leadership and those types of things. And so somebody said, you should look into this position. It looks like a good fit for you. So I did, and I got the position and I started working with the Head Start program. As a huge federal grant and a wonderful program in our area, covered the top 26 Panhandle counties of the Panhandle. And just loved it. And then after a few years, they moved me over to the big building, the main building, where I was working in the instructional services area, and finished up my career there as the deputy director of instructional services. So it's very unusual for a kindergarten teacher to end up there, but that's where I ended up. So it's exciting. I feel like
kindergarten.
You know, everything you need to know, you learned in kindergarten. So there you go. That proves it right there.
Well, talk to me about being a kindergarten teacher, though, because I feel like that's one of those, like, you either love it or it's just not your thing, right? I mean, kindergartners
are. I think that's right.
Yeah. So what was it about kindergarten that just got you?
Well, boy, I just love that early childhood piece. It's been something that's always been really fun for me. Being a child's really, sometimes their very first teacher, obviously their parents are their very first teacher, but their first public school teacher is an honor and it's a blessing. And you have the responsibility of setting the tone for the way they feel about education for the rest of their lives. Wow. And it is just, when you think about it like that, it's just, it's unbelievable. They're so smart. They're so quick. They're so clever. They are so gifted. It can never cease to blow me away. You know, they might not be able to tie their shoes, but they can do so many things. and it is just really fun to watch them grow and blossom during that year. It's just incredible. I love that sometimes there are kids that I still run into. Obviously, I've been doing this a while. So anyway, I started at 19, I'm 58. So I see them there. I'm like, oh gosh, y'all are adults and kids and they're grown, they're in college. It kind of hurts my feelings, but that's okay. But I see them and it's such a joy to see what they're doing and see how successful they are. And it's such a heartbreak when you know that there are those out there that you also were a part of their lives that have not had that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. That's yes. Kindergarten. Yeah. I have a third grader and a first grader, and how formative that kindergarten time was for them was surprising to me, I think, you know, especially only half day, but it means a lot. So that's cool.
Yeah. If you want to get my hackles up, just say that we're babysitting, then that goes
level. I bet. Well, even that first year, like all of a sudden, I mean, it happens in first grade as well, but in kindergarten, all of a sudden they're like learning really fast and like starting to read, and you're like, what is going on?
Like, yeah, just, it's magical. It really is just magical to watch their little brains work and watch them grab hold of that and hang on to the learning and just literally soak it up. They just can't wait to get there. And they're always so happy to see you and they just love you and they hug you. And they, you know, it's just, I mean, if you want to feel love, go teach kindergarten because it's the best.
Yeah,
that's loved really and cool. productive. There you go.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. That's awesome. Yeah. So it occurs to me that for your career, though, you have a husband who owns a small business, you're a full-time teacher, and you have children at home. I mean, I feel like that was a hectic, I hesitate to call it a season, but like just a hectic work life. Is that true? I mean, it seems like a lot going on, I guess.
You know, when it was happening, it didn't seem that way. I don't know if it would look that way now to me or not. It didn't feel that way. You know, teachers are really fortunate because we basically work the same calendar as our kids go to school. Right. So it being an educator was amazing. And I did not start, moving out of the classroom until my kids were much older. I think it was a race to see if I was going to graduate from WT before Aaron started with my master's. So, so they were older when I moved into the counseling position, which was a longer contract for the year. And I spent more time there. So they were pretty self-sufficient, but those early years, my priority was taking great care of my kids and raising good humans who love the Lord and being a good wife and volunteering in the community as much as I could. And then also, you know, loving on those kids that God placed in my classroom. I believed without a shadow of a doubt that every child that came into my world when I was an educator was placed there by the Lord. And I prayed for them. I prayed for them before I knew who they were. I pray over my classroom in the mornings and prayed for them during the day. I just felt like that was part of my calling.
Yeah, I guess I'd never even thought about it that way. That's a really interesting perspective on that. So, I mean, because God literally knows who's going to be in your class, right?
That's right.
God, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So what did it, I mean, what do you feel like it changed to like have that background of sort of knowing God is sovereign over even what's going on in your classroom to you, do you think?
Oh, I mean, it's just so evident in every part of my life how sovereign he is. If you go back to before I came to WT, my plan was to go to Tech straight up. Going to Tech, it's really the only thing I knew about, only college campus I'd been on. And so I was planning on going to Tech and then fell in love with WT. Interestingly enough, that boy in that biology class at just about the same time, we've talked about it many times, how his first year of college, he went to a school in Weatherford, Oklahoma. And then the second year came back, was going to go to Tech and couldn't. For some reason, everything fell through with his dorm room and he didn't have a place to live. So he came to WT. I mean, if you look at that, if you think about that, is God's sovereign hand. And, you know, when I look at the jobs that I've had, the career path that I've had, there's no doubt that it's his hand. And I tell people all the time, I know we're going to get into this later, but, you know, to go from a kindergarten teacher and a fifth grade teacher to a school counselor to a person who's managing the education and training pieces of a large Head Start program to eventually the director of instructional services at Region 16 is quite a journey for an educator. And I feel very blessed to have done that. And I thought for years that each job prepared me for the next professional education job. And I thought when I retired in a few years ago from professional education or public education, I should say, I thought that's where God put a period. And then there was going to be a whole nother book. But what I see now so clearly is every single thing that happened in that pathway led me to where I am now with Amarillo Angels. I know we're going to dig into that in a minute. So that wasn't a period, that was a comma. And now this is where he has me. And it's so cool to see how he prepared me along the path to do the work that I'm doing now.
Yeah. Well, since you broached the topic, I feel like, you know, let's talk Amarillo Angels then. Cause I want to delve into that aspect of it. Because I think that's awesome. and so much of what this whole podcast is about, honestly. So, okay, let's start off though by introducing people maybe to what you do at Amarillo Angels, what it even is, and then we'll kind of go from there. How's that?
Okay, that sounds great. So, Amarillo Angels, we started it about a little over 2 years ago. It was the first pilot project for a group out of Austin called Austin Angels. And if you haven't heard the podcast with Curry and Susan Ramirez, the founder of Austin Angels and now National Angels, you need to go back and find that. I don't know what episode it is, but it's great. It'll give you a lot of background. So this organization was originally created to walk alongside children in the foster care system and their caretakers and provide consistent support to them. We want to empower the community to wrap themselves around them. The reason that's important, there's so many reasons, but 50% of new foster parents stop fostering within the first year. And the number one reason that they give for that is that they feel a lack of support. So I may not be called to foster and adopt. You may not be called to foster and adopt, but we can all do something to help. And if support's what they need, then let's give it to them. You know, if they're doing that hard work and being the heroes there and loving on these kids who are just in the really a really traumatic time of their life and in a hard place, let's support them. The reason that's important, it's just kind of a ripple effect. So the average number of times that kiddos in foster care move in 2 years is 7. And that's, you know, 7, and it kills me. It absolutely undoes me. I was speaking to a group yesterday at a luncheon and I burst into tears because it hurts my heart. My love, God placed a love for children in my heart many, many years ago, and it breaks my heart. What these kiddos have to go through. And it happens all the time. So I may tear up in a minute, just be aware. Every time they move, that's 7 new homes, that's 7 new maybe sets of parents or parent. It's 7 possibly new siblings that they have to adjust to. It's possibly 7 new schools. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on. And every time they move, and this is the educator heart in me, just this does me in, is that they go back 4 to 6 months in their educational attainment. So if they were on grade level when they went into care very quickly, which is probably, I mean, would be unlikely, it might happen, but it'd be unlikely just based on where they are in their homes and the things that have been going on. If they were on grade level, then they can very quickly be 2, 3, 4 years behind in a flash. And so that got me. And then that just leads to a host of other things. I know you've seen the statistics, and I know Susan probably talked about them, and I won't go into detail. You can go to amarilloangels.org and learn more about it. But, you know, things like 50%. Well, there's a new statistic that I learned the other day. 50% of the girls who age out of the system will have a child within 14 months. And 75% of those moms will lose that child, lose custody of that child. So it's a perpetuating cycle. The one that really kills me is that there's a couple in the state of Texas, the state will give a tuition waiver to kids in the foster care system. So it doesn't pay for everything, but it pays for a whole lot. So they can get a really good education. Sadly, only 3% take advantage of that. And there's a lot of reasons for that, I believe. But, part of it is because they have to stay under the umbrella of the system. And when the system's managed your life for so long, that you, many times they just don't want to do that. Of that 97% that choose not to take advantage of that technical school, trade, whatever kind of school they wanted to attend, in the next year, 66% of those youth will be homeless, incarcerated, trafficked, or dead. And, you know, when you think about, these are kids from our area who by no fault of their own, and across the country, it's not just here, it's across the country, by no fault of their own, find themselves in their system. That's not acceptable. That's wrong. And as a believer, when you look at verses like Micah 6:8, that says, this is what the Lord requires, to walk justly, to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with our God. And you trace that back through all the cross references and stuff. It comes back to taking care of widows, orphans, and aliens. And God has allowed me to work with all those populations in my life. But right now, He has definitely got me working in that population with orphans.
Yeah, that's cool. Ah, that just gets me so fired up. I appreciate you talking about that. How did you end up getting into this whole deal though in the first place?
Well, that's a great story. And so give me a wave if I get going too long, because I get real excited about telling this story. So I retired, and I still do a tiny bit of consulting and training for a national publishing company, educational publishing company. I love to do that. It's fun. It ticks a lot of boxes in my life that I enjoy. And so I started off after I retired in quotes, doing some of that and loving it, enjoying traveling, you know, all over the country and meeting teachers and educators and administrators and working with them. And but right after, like literally 2 weeks after I retired, maybe not even that long, maybe a week, my precious father-in-law had a very serious spinal surgery, and we mm-hmm. knew it was very serious. And they lived in at the family place, which is out in the middle of nowhere. So my sweet mother-in-law came and lived with us while he was in the hospital for 7 weeks in recovery and rehab. And early in the morning of the day, they were supposed to go back out to the ranch. We got a phone call, and he had gotten up in the middle of the night without his walker and fallen, hit his head. And they were taken to the emergency room. And what we know now is he had a very deep brain bleed prior to that, which disoriented him. And when he fell, he was on blood thinners, and he did not survive that. It was very much of a shock. We knew there was danger going into the surgery, but 7 weeks later, that wasn't even on the radar. So, so it was so upsetting. And so we were just heartbroken. My mother-in-law is truly the most precious human being in the entire world. I absolutely adore her. And if I can aspire to be like anybody, it would be her. I tell my children all the time, I'm not Nene. You can't put that on me. I'm not Nene. But anyway, the next day she was coming down the stairs of our home, and we were sitting around the kitchen table, and we looked over, and she had a really funny look on her face. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she just shook her head no and started to collapse. And I ran to her. We sat her down on the stairs, and when she started to talk, it came out very garbled. And she'd had a little stroke, and she's fine. It was thankfully very minor, and we're very grateful for that. So for the next several months, she lived with us until she was ready to decide what she wanted to do and where she wanted to live. And going back out to the ranch just wasn't an option. So anyway, so that we walked along, got her settled in a new home, rocked along. And then a few months later, my mom became ill and had a kind of a short illness and passed away. So that was my widow season. And we lost two parents in a very short time. So that was not expected. I was very grateful that I was able to be there and help and do all those things. So fast forward past all that time, my nephew and his wife were fostering to adopt. And I saw this precious couple who have a huge support system and who really and truly were loved on all sides. And it was still such a hard process. You know, their hearts, they poured their hearts and souls into the children that were in their home, and watching them come and go and them grieve that, and seeing the kids come in traumatized and with behaviors that were difficult, you know, children who come in, it's such a different world than when I was raised in. I was raised in a very loving and, you know, home and very stable and supportive. And but to hear the things that these kids said and the things they had gone through, it just got me. So I reached out and became a CASA, and I love that, a court appointed special advocate. I did that for several years until my current thing took off. And but I still felt like it wasn't quite right. And so I was reading a blog of a Christian writer that I read from time to time. And she had a post in there about all this time I'm praying over what it is that God wants me to do. And she had a post in there about Austin Angels. And it was really about a fundraiser for them. It had a link to the organization. I clicked on it. And literally, I'll never forget where I was, what I was doing. I was sitting in a parking lot waiting because I was early to a meeting. And it was like God just grabbed my heart, and I knew immediately this was it. And started having conversations, reached out and had conversations. I guess I was a squeaky wheel because we decided, Susan and I and the boards, her board decided that through that we would become the first pilot project for expansion. Was I just wanted to see what it would take to start something like that in our area. And we agreed to collaborate, and it's been an amazing experience. So we were up and running before we knew what happened. And here we are. And so it's been great. It's been a great journey.
Wow. That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. And Susan is somebody who can certainly imbibe energy into almost anything.
Yes, so, yes. She is a, yeah. As we say in the South, a ball of fire. So
that's perfect. Yes. A ball of fire. Okay. So let's go back to what led us here originally, which is you saying that, you know, you thought God was putting a period on the end of your, you know, time as an educator, but it was really a comma. So in what ways have you seen all that come full circle in what you do now?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I will say I argued a bit with the Lord when I realized how big this was. I was like, wait. Surely I misunderstood you. I mean, I thought, you know, I just cannot, I don't know if I want to work full time. I don't know if I want to do this. And I to this day, I'm a full-time volunteer executive director. I do not accept a salary, and I won't accept a salary because of where I am in my life. That's not feasible for everyone, but I knew that I just wanted to serve. And we had a little, I mean, I kept saying, oh, I'm not sure about this. And I was with a good friend of mine, and we were leaving the Austin Angels board meeting that they had asked me to come to, I guess, to check out, make sure I was okay and all that good stuff. Right. And I was a little overwhelmed by that. And I'm not an easily overwhelmed person. And I came out of there and my friend was like, how was it? I was like, ooh, I think I may have misunderstood what the Lord was asking me to do. And she looked at me, she goes, well, that's just ridiculous. You were all fired up 3 hours ago. What happened? And so we prayed about it, and she prayed that God would give me very clear direction on what I was supposed to do. And right after that, I got a phone call from a man. Prior to that board meeting, I'd been kind of putting out feelers in our area and kind of getting the word out just with some people I knew. And a friend of mine had told him what I was wanting to do and what we were wanting to start. And he was asking me to come speak at a conference for foster parents. And I said, well, okay, there we go. And okay, yeah, I'll come do that. And so then I went back to her house, and I teach a Bible study class on Sunday mornings at our church. And I opened my curriculum, went up to the room and opened my curriculum for the week. And I kid you not, and I know God doesn't always work like this, but I believe this was from the Lord, that the lesson that week was on all the excuses that Moses made when God called him to take the children to the promised land. And I just started laughing. I started cracking up. And so I just said, you know, listen, Lord, I will do whatever you say. I will be your hands and feet, and I will, this is yours though, and you've got to open the doors. And I've been running full out ever since trying to keep up. But as for the preparation, you know, I had, you know, probably hundreds and hundreds of hours of leadership training. I have managed large groups of personnel, staff. I've been in experiences where I have spoken to the community. I can go out and speak in public. That's people's number one fear. It doesn't faze me one bit. So right, I can do that. I can write grants. I can, you know, so many of the skills that I had, and I truly believe were given to me. And that's part of the reason I didn't want to just, when I quote unquote retired, I didn't want to just put those skill sets on the shelf. I felt like I could still continue to give, and I needed to use those. People had poured into me, and I felt like that God had given me those experiences, and I needed to use them somehow. And it was just a matter of finding where that was. But it's amazing how the skill sets that I have feed right into this. The other piece of that is his providence and his provision for this organization. Oh my goodness, every single day I see something there with that. And it is just, it still amazes me, and it still boggles my mind, and it truly is his work. And I'm just now at the point where I just feel blessed to be a part of it.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, those are valuable skills that you could not get any other way than just having to straight up do them, right?
Well, yeah.
Like administration and, you know,
budgets and, you know, grants and those kinds of things. I just feel like I was very fortunate, and that he, like I said, it was just his preparation for this job that he has for me now, this work.
Which is crazy to think about, because I see that moment at which, you know, you retire from education and it feels like, now I get to, you know, move on to whatever God has for me next. And he has you running an organization.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah, God's funny that way. He's so funny.
With incredible support from the group in Austin. And what's really amazing, even more amazing, well, I don't know if it can get more amazing, but we were the pilot project, and the Panhandle is an incredible place. You know that, you're from there. People are good, and they want to give and they want to help. And they just quickly grabbed hold of our mission. And what I also see is that God prepared a lot of hearts to do this on the front side. And so when we were ready to open and launch, there were all these people who have had this heart and this calling to help in foster care, but weren't called to foster and adopt. And they didn't know how to help. Right. They thought that was the only way you could help. And so, man, the community just jumped on board. We've had a great experience. And because of that, Austin has created National Angels. And now there are chapters all over the country that are open or in the process of opening up. And so this model that they've developed and we've replicated is making a difference across the country. And so we're just tickled to be a tiny part of that.
Yeah. Well, can you talk just a little bit about what y'all are doing or what, you know, for people who may not be acquainted with, you know, Austin Angels or National Angels, like what is it that you're, what's your hustle right now? What are y'all doing? You know?
Well, we are just trying to do exactly what our mission statement says, do all the things that help community and empower the community to walk alongside these families and these kiddos. So I ran numbers yesterday and I don't have them in front of me. I'm sorry. My brain doesn't work very well without paper and pencil and something in front of me anymore. But, you know, in the first few months of our existence, 27 months, I believe. Oh, here it is right here. I do have it. That we have 1,347 children and parents in the foster care system have benefited from our programs and our events.
What?
Yes. And we did, up to this point, we've done it 100% as a volunteer organization. We did 12 events last year. And part of that purpose is to serve those that aren't in our, we have two main programs we'll talk about in a minute, but the Love Box program and the Dare to Dream Mentoring. But there are so many, while they were building those programs, there's so many families that aren't receiving any support from our organization. And we wanted to serve as many as we could. And so we hosted 12 events last year. We were very fortunate to have gotten a grant from a local foundation and four events, enrichment events. And so we hosted 12 events last year. And we did that with the help of 519 volunteers.
Gosh, Gwen,
I know, it's amazing.
That is amazing. Oh my goodness.
It is incredible. And like I said, that's the reason for the success is the people of the Panhandle. And I know there are people like that all over the country. So it's amazing.
Gosh. Wow. That's cool. That's cool. So, so in addition to hosting events, y'all have Love Boxes?
We do. We have the mentoring. Yeah, we have. Well, actually we are getting ready to launch the mentoring. We've been focused on Love Box groups. And so Love Box groups are just groups of the community, people who want to be a part of supporting these families. They help provide the support that those foster families need, which means in those healthy homes that those kids can stay there longer and then they can learn how to build healthy relationships and grow. And what we know about kids in foster or any kid, they don't have to be in foster care. If they've been have trauma or abuse, it changes the composition of their brain. And we know that there are some things that can remedy that, can mitigate that. And that is safety, good nutrition, consistent relationships, support, love, all those things, encouragement can begin to mitigate that damage in the brain and repair it. And that's amazing that God makes us that way. But he does. And we're grateful for that. So these groups of people, we recruit, we train, we manage the background check processes because we always want our kiddos to be safe and secure and not in any more danger. And they agree to walk alongside. Once we do that, we connect them with an actual family that fosters in our area, in their community, and they agree to walk alongside them for a period of a year. And what they do is they just provide support. And that can look like a lot of different things. It can look like we have these things called love boxes. That's just thoughtful and needed items that they can use. Sometimes the budgets are tight. And sometimes when you bring in three or four or five extra children into your home, you can only imagine how much that stretches the budget. they are paid a small amount of money to help with these kiddos, but it's not enough to cover everything.
Yeah, it's not.
And so I get kind of frustrated when I hear people say, oh, they're just doing that to get rich. No, I don't. I've not met one yet.
I've not met one of those families yet.
So who's getting rich, I promise you. So they, many of them have jobs. They have, you know, full time, they have children, biological or other adopted children. And we believe in supporting the entire family with that Love Box group. So you get to know your family. You get to know what that looks like, what their needs are. If it's, you know, mom needs a night just to, you know, to go walk the dog. If they're background check and certified to a certain level, they can stay with the kids for a little bit and give mom and dad a break or let them go on a date night or, you know, whatever. So it's been a really sweet thing to see. Some of the sweetest relationships have been formed with these groups, and it's growing quickly. And we are just so excited to see. I've got people, mamas that just come up and hug me and say, oh, we wouldn't be still fostering if it weren't for our Love Box group. And thank you so much. And it's so, so exciting to see the kind of impact that you can have in these families and the lives of these children.
Yeah. That's cool. So does Amarillo Angels cover Lubbock as well? You said the top 26 counties?
Yeah. These first two years, we focused on the top 26 counties of the Panhandle. If you guys are not familiar with that, it's the part that sticks up, and we're right in the middle in the state of Texas. So, but we were designed to cover all of the Department of Family and Protective Services Region 1, which extends all the way from the top of the Panhandle down past Lubbock. And so we are moving into Lubbock, and we're very excited about that. And eventually we'll get started in Plainview. We're moving slowly. We had our first event so that folks in Lubbock can get to know us and we can get to know them. And we had the other day at Texas Tech, it was at the Writing Center, and it was just a magical day. The kids came with their parents, and these are children in foster care, and their parents and their siblings, and had some time with the horses. And, you know, horses are magical. They just, the kids love them. Yeah. And it was just so fun to see them. And then we were able to gift them with something as they left. And just a thank you for coming and a way to help them. We're trying to grow our Love Box groups in Lubbock. And so I'm going down on a regular basis and meeting with groups of people there in the community and talking about what we do and how we do it and why we do it, and building that volunteer army down there so we can serve those kids in that community.
That's awesome. I know some people that you need to go meet with, so I'll get you that info.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. No, I think, I mean, this is such a no-brainer to me. I mean, you're investing in the future, which these kids are the future. We have to take care of people, right? I mean, that's what we're called to do as Christians and as citizens. And it's so easy. It's like, oh yeah, of course I would be involved in an organization like this, you know?
Yeah. So. And that's what, one of the things that we try to do. So we try to engage the community in a way that works for them. So I had somebody stop by the office the other day, and they just wanted to do some things. And we've got an event coming up for some mamas that foster. Mm. And one thing we try to do every time we take a gift or do an event, or a group takes a bag, we let them determine what goes into that delivery and that thing. But we want every person, that family, every single month to get a handwritten note of encouragement. Wow. And that is so important. And so this lady just wanted to help. She's like, so she came and got some note cards, and she's writing notes of encouragement for those mamas that'll be attending that event. Let me tell you a story about a family that I know here. And they had one child, and she was 7 or 8 and had been the only child for a long time. And they felt the Lord's calling to foster, to adopt. And so they were expecting children about the age of their child, their young daughter. And they ended up getting 2 young girls who were in their teens.
Oh.
And so that was it was an amazing experience. And those 2 girls, which is very unusual for kiddos in their teens to be adopted, but they have now been adopted by that family. Wow. But it you can imagine the change in the dynamic in the house. And this young girl who had been the only one all of a sudden was no longer the only one. And you've got kids, you know what that looks like. So they came to a back to school event that we had, and we were able to give school supplies to 175 children last fall, and beautiful bags and bags of school supplies. And through the generosity and donations of the community. And so they took their things home and they got in them later and found the notes of encouragement. A couple of weeks later, mom noticed that that note of encouragement was taped to the mirror of the, wow, their biological daughters in her room and to the mirror on her dresser. And she asked her, she said, "Tell me why you have that up there." And she said, "Oh, mama, you know, sometimes my sisters are hard." And she said, "But when I'm having a hard day, I come in here and I read that note and it just makes me feel better." So we had a volunteer write that note who has no idea the impact that that note made on that young child. But those words of affirmation, those words of truth, those words of positivity and encouragement, and letting them know all the people in that family, they are creations of our God, and they need to know how much they are loved and how much they are cherished and how important they are. Some of these kids have never, ever heard that, never, ever had those words spoken over them. And some of these parents haven't either. I know a Lovebox mama who said, "I have been doing this for 7 years and no one has told me I was doing a good job until now." And she's an amazing foster mom. And it's not because the people in the system who are doing that incredible work, the CPS and the placement agent, it's not because they don't want to do this. It's because they don't have the time. Right. Their caseloads are so high. One of my CASA, when I was still being a CASA, one of my caseworkers had 48 children on her caseload.
That's insane.
And it's virtually impossible to even check all the boxes of things that they're supposed to do with that many kids on their caseload. And yet she's trying to, and there's no way she can do this other piece. So again, that's where the community steps in. That's where the believers step in and say, we are here for you. We are going to support you. We are going to love you. We are going to stand by your side and walk this journey with you.
You were supposed to be the one that cried, and now you've got me tearing up.
Oh, that's not over yet. I'm still going for it.
I appreciate that. Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's cool. That's important work.
It is.
I love hearing about all that stuff. Y'all are.
And it's a blessing. You know, when you know how it is when you start, you think, "I'm going to go bless somebody else." And you know what happens? And you just get this incredible blessing back. Yeah. And it's such a joy and it's such a privilege. Just like teaching those kindergartners or those fifth graders or whatever. It's such a privilege to be a part of this and walk with them on this journey. And make a difference in the life of the kids, these kiddos.
That's cool. That's really cool. Okay. So something I did not want to neglect in this interview is I wanted to pick your brain about retirement.
I don't know a whole lot about that, Curry.
Well, no, that's what I wanted to ask about, because I feel like I'm still relatively newish in my career, right? It's still building up early in my career. But I feel like in our society and in our culture, even in Christian culture, your entire career is almost built around retirement, right? It's saving for retirement. It's pushing towards retirement, and it's getting ready to stop working. You know what I mean? Like, and I think about it a lot, and I have a lot of maybe problems with the way that we've sort of structured this, where you're trying to get out of work, you know? And I feel like you have taken a different path. Maybe a path I see myself on someday more, but can you just talk about the decision-making? 'Cause you could retire in the classical sense of it, right? If you wanted to.
Absolutely.
So why did you can you talk through the decision-making process of why not?
I have to think about that for a minute. Well, you know, I think as believers, we're called to work. I mean, God put Adam and Eve in the garden and gave it to them for them to work and manage. And amen. I believe even when we get to heaven, I can't quote the scripture right off the top of my head, but I think we're going to be working. And I think it's going to be, it's what we're called to do. Part of the reason that I felt like I needed to be doing something is when I retired, everybody in my life looked just like me. I didn't have everybody that I was seeing on a regular basis, everyone that I, you know, in my life, in the middle of my life, were believers who were, you know, middle class, who were just living a life kind of like mine, you know, and that's great. And I love those people. They're some of my greatest friends and I adore being with them. But how am I going to complete the mission that God's given us to do, that we're to go and share the gospel with others if everybody in my life was already a believer. That was part of it. And I really, that became a burden to me, that I began to see I was in a bubble, and I prayed that God would take me out of my bubble. And boy, has he ever done that.
That's a dangerous prayer.
Yeah. Man. Not only has he allowed me to be part of his work with Amarillo Angels, but I have been, again, doing that consulting and that training across the country and even internationally. For the last two summers, I have gone over to a province in China and helped get a school started and train teachers and administrators there. And it's been an incredible experience in walking into a whole new culture. I had done something similar to that a few years ago when I was still working in India. And so just through a lot That's of cool. connections, God just opened this door for me and told me to go. So I went. And, you know, when you ask God to take you out of your bubble, you better be ready to get out of your bubble. But that was a main part of it, is just, and I always want to be obedient. I always want to listen and obey what he's calling me to. And it took a while for him to get me to where I needed to be, but I do feel very strongly that that's where I was. And it, like I said, when I was sitting in that parking lot, I just knew. It was like he grabbed my heart and said, "This is it. This is it. This is it, child. Go do it." Yeah. So I've always been a goer and a doer. So I just took off.
What else am I going to do? God said go, yeah, so I go, right? Yeah.
And I do think he has wired me to work. I do love to vacation and do lunch and all those kinds of things, but I also think that he has wired me to work. And so as I go, I think that's what I'm supposed to do. And as a believer, we're not called to stop ministering. We're not called to stop sharing the gospel. It doesn't matter where we are. We're not called to cease working. We're called to do this forever. We have a cousin who's retiring, quote unquote, from the ministry. He said, "I'm not retiring. I'm just going to be doing something different." Right. And that's really where I am as well.
No, I love that. I love that.
We don't ever get to retire from God's word.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And it looks different in different seasons. But I mean, really, you could think of your entire life up to this point as preparing you for the important work you're doing now, right? Like this is, where God has, has had you 100%. Steering the whole way, right?
Yeah, 100%. I see that. 100%.
Which is just cool. It's amazing how he does that. He doesn't waste a single step. He doesn't waste a single hour of our lives, but uses them all for his glory. So
absolutely.
That's good. That's good stuff. Thanks for being willing to delve into some of that. So
happy to do it.
Yeah. All right. Well,
love to tell a story.
Yeah, right. Well, you got great stories, so I'm enjoying. Let's jump into our final two questions, though, if you're okay with that. Sound good?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
Ever had? Oh, wow. I don't know that I would say that. I'm not a very kind of out there person, so I don't know that I would say that. That's probably those two different opportunities to work in India and China. I mean, it wasn't strange, but it was certainly out of what I ever saw myself doing.
Yeah.
Taking off and going halfway across the world into different cultures and working with teachers and administrators was not strange, but it was certainly something I never saw myself coming. I don't have any great stories about weird jobs, but That's probably the most unusual, I'd say, maybe not strange.
Yeah, that definitely qualifies. So, I mean, who would have ever thought, right? I mean, what was it like teaching in those environments, or equipping people in those environments?
It was really cool. In India, we took a team over, and I had some friends over there, and they were working in the education industry, and specifically with early childhood. And with my early childhood background, we talked a lot about some things. And so I wrote a 12-day teacher training curriculum for them, and they were using it. And they were like, "Well, you have to come do this with us. I mean, we wrote this thing, so let's go." So we took a team over there, and it was cool. So we were something to behold. I think there were 14 of us, and we were... It's kind of like what it would be like to be a rock star, because every place we went, people were taking pictures of us. And, it was like, what are we going to do when we get home and nobody wants our picture? I mean, it's so weird. And so, because it was just unusual to see that picture. We had purchased Indian clothes, and we wore Indian clothing the whole time we were there. And so it was something to behold for sure. And, when we were at the Taj Mahal one day we did tourism and to kind of go see, and we went out to the Taj Mahal, which is an incredible experience. And And I mean, people were just flocking around us. It was like day two or three that we were there, and it was hard to believe. But and every time we would start to do something in the training, like all the phones would come up and they would start recording. And there's no telling where our videos are across the country of India. But so that was crazy. And then in China, it was just such a neat experience. Obviously, had some great translators. This area that I was in is not a it is a capital city, but it is not a one of the larger ones, and very few Westerners there. And so people would walk up to you at the mall and say, hello, and you'd say, hello. And they, and I'd start to talk, and then they would just say, hello, because that's the only English word they knew. Right. That's what they wanted to, They wanted to try to use their English. So that was exciting. And, and to be able to go back to China the second year and see how this school is wanting to use a very much of a Western model in their education of their students. And, you know, that's a little bit hard for someone who's never seen that and observed that to be able to turn around and teach in a completely different way. And they had supports long after I left, and other people coming in and helping them and helping to coach them and those kinds of things after that first time I was there. But to go back and see the growth and the experiences and the way the teachers had grasped hold of what I had shared with them was something that I don't often get to see as a trainer and a consultant, because it's usually kind of a one and done thing. And, and so it was really neat to see that and build those relationships with folks over there. And it was just really a cool experience. So they're special. They asked me to come back this August, and unfortunately I can't go. But I have a feeling I'll be back another time.
That's cool. I love it. I love it. Okay. So my final question then is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring God's kingdom more into their work?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I really thought, thanks for sending that ahead of time. So I have to come up with that off the top of my head. But I think we've hit on it already. I think that number one, that every place that God puts us, in my experience, and I believe it's accurate. I'm not a theologian, but I believe it's accurate, is done on purpose. And sometimes those places are hard, and sometimes those places are rough and to be. And sometimes you don't see the why behind that, but know that you're there for a reason, and that your job is to love people and love him and to share his word and to share the gospel with them. And that can be tough. There's a book that I read years ago called Under the Overpass. And if you haven't ever read it, I can't tell you the author, but it's amazing. You should go get it and read it. It's about a man who chose to go homeless and his experiences. And he says at the end, just because you pray about something doesn't mean it's going to be easy. And that has stuck with me through the years. And I've seen that in my own life, that God has placed me in some tough places and doing things that really stretched me a lot. But I see now on the backside how wonderful his providence and his provision were for this period of my life in Amarillo Angels, and how is allowed me to be able to do this work. And so even if it's tough, you don't give up. You just keep moving forward.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. I think that's important, an important word for people. So, well, Gwen, it is so nice to get to sit down and chat with you and all that. So
thank you, Curry. I've enjoyed every minute of this. I love this podcast thing. It's super fun.
It's fun, right? Now you're for sure a pro.
this is podcast number two, I mean.
Yeah, you're taking off from here, right?
That's right. Yeah. No, it's so great because it's just a conversation, and I love that.
It's easy. So, well, thanks again. And hey, next time I'm in Amarillo, I'm looking you up.
Oh, please do. Please do. Yeah. We'd love it. Absolutely love it. And I'll look forward to keeping in touch with you.
All right. Thanks, Gwen.
Thanks, Curry. All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Gwen. I just want to encourage you to check out Amarillo Angels, National Angels, all the things. They just got some amazing work going on. I think it's important stuff and stuff we should be talking about and considering as Christians. I think it's a no-brainer. Foster care is a no-brainer. So, I hope you got something out of listening to this episode. I still, even editing and going back, I was like, gosh, there was such good stuff that I just need to sit and think about. And so I'd love to hear what those points were for you in this episode. So let me know. And until next time, get out there and hustle.